the day. I think Wemby's going to have his moment and move on to his first conference finals. All right, that's the first hour of our show. We are going to move now into the second hour just after this. Welcome in if you're just tuning in. It is 1 o'clock on a Tuesday. You are listening to WMUC FM Radio on 90.5 here in College Park. I'm Jack Wynn, your host of Winning Time, your favorite sports talk show in the DMV area. Now, we just spent our first hour talking a lot about the NBA. We've analyzed these playoffs so far. I made my predictions for round two, which if you miss them, I've got Pistons over Cavs in six, Knicks over Sixers in six, Thunder over Lakers in five, or in six, actually. I have LeBron taking two games off of them, and the Spurs over the Wolves in a seven-game battle. We move now to the second hour of our show, where we will be right with you to talk about all of it and more after this quick break.
Come all of you good workers, good news to you I'll tell, of how the good old Union has come in here to dwell.
Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Are you a graduate assistant, research assistant, or teaching assistant at UMD? Are you tired of low pay, long hours, high fees, and no safety net for international students? So are we. The UMD Graduate Labor Union is organizing for collective bargaining rights for graduate workers on campus.
Right now, the administration unilaterally controls our working conditions, but we are fighting to change that. To learn more about graduate labor organizing efforts on campus and what a union can do for you, visit umdgradworkers.org.
I can ride my bike with no handlebars. No handlebars.
Sign up for the weekly bike rides every Tuesday around College Park. Don't have a bike? Just rent it from the campus bike shop. Spending time outdoors has great benefits. It raises your vitamin D levels, it improves concentration and focus, helps you recover from injury and stress, and it may even mean more smiles throughout the day. To get more information, log on to crs.umd/Maryland Adventure Program. Hashtag stay active.
I can tell you about Lee Erickson. I know all the words to De Colores, and I'm proud to be an American.
Do you like the outdoors? Join the Maryland Adventure Program. This is a student-powered adventure that promotes personal growth and overall wellness. You can tackle a 50-foot wall through rock climbing or gather a group of friends to experience the challenge course. To get more information, log on to crs.umd.edu/Maryland Adventure Program.
All right, welcome back into the show. We've got a lot more to talk about. And we're coming back to the NBA right here. The NBA playoffs have a lot of weight to them. Because in basketball right now, there's been this trend over the last decade where the regular season has become devalued more and more. There is not a lot of emphasis placed on regular season accomplishments. If anything, players that overachieve in the regular season often find themselves with more pressure and expectations in the playoffs. And as everybody knows, you can only have one champion, which means for all of these other players, you came up short somehow. And the other thing that makes the NBA interesting is the conversation of legacies. What does this win mean for the history of the NBA? What does it mean for your career and the way that we view and evaluate you as a player and as an all-time great? These are questions that get answered in the NBA playoffs. They're questions that are being answered every day at this point as we watch the league proceed. So, if anybody took a ding these playoffs, it was Denver's Nikola Jokic. And we need to talk about the loss that they took to Minnesota in the first round. Now, Nikola Jokic, unbelievable player, three-time MVP, finals MVP and champion, was inarguably the best player in the world for a few years earlier in the 2020s. However, since he won a championship, things have started to fall apart. And this series was the pinnacle of that. Nikola Jokic was bad these playoffs. Now, when you look at the box score, it won't tell you that story. He averaged 26 points, 13 rebounds, 9 assists. Those are unbelievable numbers. Some of the best that you'll ever see statistically. But that's the thing about Nikola Jokic that has always irked me, is he has received unfathomable amounts of praise and positive testimony in his favor because of the statistics and because of what the box score says. And we've never seen a player put up the numbers like he has at that position, at his size, with his court vision, the advanced stats, the efficiency, all of it. We put Jokic on a pedestal because what he did was special. But you need to be fair. While his box score stats were great, he shot less than 50% of the field as an inside player. He shot 19% from three this series as somebody who's supposed to be a reliable shooter. That completely takes your offense out of it. Jokic is not some great defender. He is supposed to be one of the most impactful offensive players of all time. And that impact was almost negligible this series. At the very least, it seemed like Rudy Gobert did a really great job handling him, which has never been the case for a player like Jokic before. Since they won the title, Denver hasn't gotten past round two. They have poorly constructed this roster. They have let key role players leave, and they have depended on less talented role players to do the same jobs. That is not a recipe for success. They've gotten through multiple head coaches, and they have just lost whatever identity they seem to have for that stretch of time where it felt like nobody could beat the Nuggets. Now, Jokic does need help. He has a co-star in Jamal Murray, but Murray is too inconsistent to be a second-best player and a champion at this point. Obviously, he was in the past, but now that the league has changed and they've gotten older, he's not that guy anymore. He shot 36% from the field in the first round, 26% from three. Is it possible that the Timberwolves' defense is just so menacing that they turned these two great players into pumpkins? Perhaps. But I think it says more about the culture of the Nuggets and the fact that all year I was able to identify that I didn't think this was a great team and that I thought they were missing key pieces. They don't really have playmaking guards, which if you have a playmaking center, fine, but you still need somebody to set up, bring the ball up the floor, and run the offense. They need better defenders and more reliable shooters. They need a lot of help. They need depth, most of all. And I started this hour and this segment by talking about how legacies are impacted through the results of the NBA playoffs. And for Nikola Jokic, I think that this is a moment where fans are almost slapped in the face or had a cup of water thrown on them, because the commentary about Jokic's all-time ranking is unfair. People kind of willy-nilly throw around that he's a top 10 player of all time. I don't believe that. I don't think there's an argument for that. You can argue that he's top 20 of all time, but even that I don't view as a guarantee. We have seen a lot of great all-time players, and Jokic hasn't accomplished as much of what a lot of them have. You can talk about his peak, you can talk about his talent, you can talk about his play style. But the reality is, Jokic has won one championship, has underperformed since winning it, and is not a good player on half of the side of the game. He's not a great defender, and he never has been. So let's talk about Jokic all time, because he is in a very similar spot to where Giannis was a few years ago, where you have the incredible start to your career, you win a title early, you have all these expectations to start climbing into the top 10 all-time ranks, and you don't get there. Jokic right now. Let's talk about the all-time NBA rankings. The top 10, or the top, there's a group of 12 players that can be in the top 10. All 12 of these guys are definitively better than Nikola Jokic. And those 12 are LeBron, Michael Jordan, Bill Russell, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Wilt Chamberlain. They're all definitively better than Jokic. Steph Curry, Hakeem Olajuwon, Kobe Bryant, definitively better than Jokic. Tim Duncan, Shaquille O'Neal, definitively better than Nikola Jokic. Magic Johnson. 12 guys that are better than Jokic without question. Okay, so he can be 13th then. Well, is he better than Dr. J? I don't think so. Dr. J won 4 MVPs and multiple titles. All right, well, is he better than Jerry West? No, Jerry West made the finals 11 times. He's the logo. He's one of the greatest guards we've ever seen. All right, Oscar Robertson? Definitely not. Moses Malone, I still have over Nikola Jokic, one of the best rebounders, multiple-time MVP, multiple-time champion from the 80s. So now Jokic is down to 15. Or 16, excuse me. And that leaves him in a conversation with the following people. Nikola Jokic versus Kevin Durant, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Dwayne Wade, Isaiah Thomas, David Robinson. This is a conversation that needs to be had. It is not a definite that Jokic is even in the top 15. And he has kind of existed. People have viewed him with rose-colored glasses for the last few years because the statistics have been so amazing. But these multiple years in a row now coming up short is not what a top 10 player does. Somebody who I think is going to join this conversation is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. We're going to go through a few players here in the NBA playoffs that can have their legacies legitimately impacted. And if these playoffs go the way that I expect them to, Jokic is going to have company. Because joining that group that I just mentioned is going to be Shai. Think about it again. Shai's not even going to be 28 years old, but he's going to have multiple first-team All-NBA appearances, multiple All-Defensive appearances. He's going to be a two-time league MVP, a two-time finals MVP, and a two-time champion. That's at least as good as Jokic is. And I think that Shai is going to take a big leap in these all-time rankings. He's going to be one of the best guards that we've ever seen. He's just going to have to sustain this. He's got such a unique play style of attacking the basket, not really playing from the outside, even in this modern era, drawing fouls and locking up your best guard. I think that he can really do some damage. And I want to be wary of the expectations that we set for Shai, because I don't want him to end up in the same spot that Jokic and Giannis did, where they get that first title and just aren't able to overcome structural issues or whatever it may be. Something I think Shai has an advantage with on that end is that the Thunder seem much more prepared for the future than either the Bucks or the Nuggets did for Giannis and Jokic. The Thunder have 15 first-round picks over the next few years. Their team is stacked with young players. All of their best players, for the most part, are also already locked up for long-term contracts. So this is a team that's going to stay together. They're going to win together. They're still very young. And Shai gets to be the leader of this franchise. I'm excited to see how high he can climb all time. Next, Joel Embiid has legacy on the line here. Joel Embiid is one of two MVPs to not make a conference finals. And he has been looking to get over the hump for years. Joel Embiid's story is a bit of a disappointing one. Because when he was drafted third overall, there were high expectations for the kind of player he would be with the Sixers. He missed a lot of time due to injury those first few years, and it was a slow development for them. And that's when Joel Embiid coined the term the process. He told everyone to trust the process. And it became his nickname in the league because of how the 76ers were planning to develop and build a contender. Unfortunately, the process seemed to have failed. Joel Embiid, although he won a league MVP and exhibited great dominance across the NBA, he was never able to get over that hump or to prove that he was a winner. He was dominated by the Celtics for a long time. He lost in series to a couple other teams, and he just was never the winner that people thought he would. He reached his peak against the Atlanta Hawks in Game 7, where they folded and lost their chance to make the conference finals, where they would have played another contender. But now the Sixers have another chance, because they finally beat Boston, and Embiid was great while doing it. And now they head to New York, to Madison Square Garden, to take on the Knicks, who have been on fire recently. If Joel Embiid is able to pull out this series, it is going to be great for him. Now, I don't think it's going to raise his all-time ranking too much necessarily. He's definitely a top 50 all-time player already right now. He won a league MVP. He's been dominant for a half decade. But you don't move up all-time lists by winning second-round series. You move up all-time lists by making and winning finals. And even if the Sixers are able to somehow pull through, there would be more left on the plate that he would need to finish. And don't get me wrong, it would be impressive if he's able to do so, especially with the level that the New York Knicks are playing at right now. As I've mentioned a couple of times, they've led each of their last four games played by 30 points. Jalen Brunson has been unstoppable. They've played electric defense. It's going to take a tall order to beat this Knicks team for Philly. And if Embiid and Maxey and the rest of this roster are able to do it, my hat's off to them. And I hope that Embiid is able to then close out some other games in these playoffs to take advantage of this opportunity in front of them. Next, Victor Wembanyama. And this one's pretty clear. I mean, it's his first playoff series, or his first playoff run. All the expectations were that he would go on to be one of the greatest players we've ever seen. People have said he has GOAT potential to be even better than LeBron or Michael Jordan were. And to do that, you've got to start winning. Now, winning in the first round was good. You don't want to have a stain on your resume that early. But now things get tough. And now the Spurs are facing a real playoff opponent. And the question is, how does Wemby respond? Not only to the stakes that he's playing at, but to the adversity he faced in the first game where he struggled. 5 of 17 from the field, 0 of 8 from 3. Now, something that reassures me about Wemby, and that I think says a lot about his character, is that he still tried to impact the game as much as possible, even when his shot wasn't falling, which is what superstars do best. It's what LeBron has always done. It's what Kobe has always done. If your shot's not falling, try to impact the game in other ways. And he had 12 blocks last night, broke the record for most blocks by a player in a playoff game. So a truly incredible force is Wembanyama in the paint. He has to win this matchup against Gobert. Rudy Gobert has been playing really well. A few years ago, he was seen as almost an ineffective guy in the playoffs because teams would just space him off the floor. But in round one, he played excellent against Nikola Jokic. And so far in round two, he is not afraid of the Wemby matchup. I think Wembanyama's shot does start to come back. I think he's going to be a little more consistent. I think he's going to play better. I think we're going to see a more effective offensive output from him this season. And I think we're going to see some more high-scoring games during the year. Again, this is somebody who averaged 34 points on nearly 50-40-90 efficiency in the regular season against the Timberwolves. It's not like they've just figured him out. So, if the Spurs are going to win this series, they're really going to have to win Game 2. because being down 0-2 and then going on the road to Minnesota for the next two games is a really hard spot to be in, especially for a young and inexperienced team. That's got 3-1 written all over it. So you have to win game two at home. You have to then steal one on the road in Minnesota, come back to San Antonio for game five, hope that it's tied, and try to move forwards. But Minnesota stole home court advantage that first game, and it's going to be a tough task for the Spurs to beat them. If Wemby's going to be able to do it, he's going to have to live up to the expectations that have been set for him, and he's going to have to take that first step on building a legacy. Next, Cade Cunningham. He needs to start living up to the hype, which it seems like he is from his round one performance. He was a first overall pick. He was seen as a franchise-changing player. And over the last four seasons, he's proven to be just that. He's taken Detroit from the bottom of the NBA to the top of the Eastern Conference. They've won 60 games this season, and he just pulled out an improbable 3-1 first-round comeback. Not to mention a comeback where he averaged 36 points per game over the last three games. Fun note, by the way, the last time a one seed came back from down 3-1 against an eight seed in the playoffs was the Pistons over the Magic in 2003. It was the second bad boy Pistons with Rasheed Wallace and Ben Wallace and, you know, Rip Hamilton and all those guys, Chauncey Billups. But now it's the new addition. You've got Cade Cunningham, who is trying to build now a legacy for himself. He has slid a bit under the radar. He could have been an MVP candidate last season. He definitely should have been an MVP candidate this season if his health had sustained him. And instead, he hasn't gotten the acknowledgement that I think he deserves. Cade Cunningham is a superstar in this league. He's a top 10 player, maybe a top 7 player, and he needs to continue to live up to the hype of being a first-round pick or first overall pick and franchise-changing player. You can't lose to Cleveland. Cleveland is not a consistent team. They haven't made a conference final since LeBron left, and Donovan Mitchell can't outperform you. James Harden can't beat you in a playoff situation. Cade Cunningham is going to be by far the best player on the court. Cleveland's got some good defenders. Evan Mobley is going to make it hard for him to get inside and do what he wants to. But if you are the superstar that people think you are, this is your moment to prove it. Go get to your first Eastern Conference Finals. Next is LeBron. There have been a lot of interesting conversations about LeBron over the last few weeks. Because before the Rocket series, people were saying, he's old, can't do it. The Rockets are a really good team. He's not going to be able to win on his own. And then they went up 3-0, and he looked great. And then all of a sudden, the Rockets won two games. And it was, are the Lakers going to be the first team to blow a 3-0 lead? LeBron is too old. He can't really do it. And then he had 28-8-7 in the closeout game six and was a top 10 defender throughout the first round of the playoffs. So LeBron just keeps proving his doubters wrong. And winning this series is an unbelievable accomplishment for someone of this age. He has a chance against the Thunder to do some really incredible stuff. Really incredible stuff. If he has one or two games where he just plays great and they win, that's going to impact how people view him. And the question is, has this first round made him the consensus greatest of all time? I don't think so. I can't imagine if you were an MJ guy before this, seeing him beat Amen Thompson and the Rockets is what takes it over the top for you. I would imagine beating the Oklahoma City Thunder would. If the Lakers are somehow able to pull this one off, then I think we would start to see a consensus develop. But the conversation with LeBron and Jordan is so interesting because you can debate their peaks. You can argue they were close. LeBron almost won unanimous MVP. He won almost won Defensive Player of the Year. All that stuff throughout a couple of seasons. He was one of the greatest athletes ever. Jordan, multiple three-peats in an eight-year stretch. Great. Their peaks were awesome. LeBron made 9 finals in 10 years. Great accomplishments. But LeBron blows him away in terms of longevity. The one thing we know for sure that Jordan is better than LeBron at is scoring, and LeBron's got over 10,000 more points than Michael does. So, I don't think that first-round matchups can impact legacies once you get to the top. If you're moving up, then they can. And if you have stakes around yourself already, like they did with Embiid, then the playoff series can impact how people view you. But if you're already at the top of the league, you're in conversations with the greatest of all time. Beating a 5 seed is not going to do it. Beating one of the greatest teams of all time at 41 would. All right, one last thing to talk about as we are almost halfway through the second hour of our show here. The Knicks and their legacy as a franchise. Because I think that the Knicks are going to make the finals. I've been saying that for a while now. And that's something that the fans have just been dying for. They haven't made a finals since the lockout year with Patrick Ewing. Before that, they hadn't made a finals since the Willis Reed era in the 70s with Clyde Frazier. This would be amazing for the city of New York and for sports as a whole. When the Knicks are good, it's exciting. The fans explode. The media loves it. And this is a New York Knicks team that has played with so much passion over the last few seasons and so much fight and desire to win and get to this spot that I think it's just going to be a really fun story in the media. If they win, then this is a team that has their legacy cemented in sports forever. If they at least get there, it'll be signs that this team hasn't stopped improving and is going to continue to be a contender over the next few years unless they make big changes. The Knicks are the only team in the NBA to have won a playoff series over each of the last 4 seasons. That is a stat that I don't think Knicks fans would have ever expected just 5 years ago. And I'm just proud of them as an organization. They were at the bottom of the league since Melo left, and they have turned now into a top-flight contender in the Eastern Conference. And if they get to the finals, I believe that they're going to give whoever they face up against a real run for their money. All right. We talked about Jokic. We checked in on our legacy leaderboard. We are now going to take a quick break, send you a couple of messages, and when we come back, we have got some more topics to talk about. We've talked a lot of basketball. We're going to start opening up the show a little bit with you again after this.
Ever wonder why you feel like a complete zombie when your alarm goes off after 8 hours, if you're even lucky enough to get that much sleep? As college students, it feels almost impossible for us to get enough sleep. We're constantly told to get 8 hours, but is that really the magic number? Did you know that throughout the night, your body cycles through periods of light sleep and very deep sleep? Most people's sleep cycles tend to last 90 minutes, so if you aim for 8 hours, your alarm is likely to go off just as you're diving into deeper sleep. Try aiming for 7.5 hours of sleep and see how you feel in the morning. If you feel great, you probably nailed it and found your sleep cycle. If you don't feel perfect just yet, test out an 85 or 95 minute sleep cycle instead. Not only will you feel great in the mornings once you discover your magic number, you'll also add about 30 minutes of valuable time to your day.
Are those early morning classes starting to feel like a marathon? Did Dodge strike again, towing your car when you least expected it? We get it, and we're here to listen. Whether it's academic stress, relationship issues, or just a bout of loneliness, Lean on Me College Park is here for you. Our supporters are fellow students trained in mental health support to help you through life's ups and downs. You can text our free and anonymous line anytime from 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. 7 days a week at 301-494-8808. You can also follow us at leanonme_CP for updates and resources. Again, our number is 301-494-8808. We hope you'll let us be a shoulder for you to lean on.
Are you looking for a club that celebrates friendship? Then Best Buddies might be the one for you. We organize social events for local folks with disabilities to come to campus and hang out. Some of our highlights of the past years have been our holiday parties, a polar bear plunge in the freezing Chesapeake Bay, our friendship walk with Best Buddies branches from around the state, and a winter formal with over 80 people. And if you want to learn more information, check out our Instagram at BestBuddiesUMB.
Speech problems. Who's got them? If you're worried about that class presentation, come on down to the Oral Communication Center, or OCC for short. We offer support for students who need help with their communication and public speaking skills. We're based in the Skinner Building in room 2117 from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. But if you need a little help in the afternoon, we're in McKeldin Library room 2111 after 4 p.m. Go to umd.mywconline.net to schedule an appointment, but walk-ins are always welcome. See you there.
Call Health Center, a peer counseling and crisis intervention hotline at the University of Maryland. Health Center is here to listen. No issue is too big or too small. We are here for you. Help Center offers anonymous and confidential hotline phone calls and walk-in services, free anonymous pregnancy testing, and free condoms. Call 301-314-HELP or stop by Help Center on the third floor of South Campus Diner today. You are not alone. Won't you please, please help me?
All right. Welcome back into the show. We have spent a lot of time on basketball and on the NBA. We've talked about the last few games. We've talked about the future of the playoffs and what it means for some key players and their legacies. Been a lot of in-depth conversation, but now we shift sports and we move to the NFL. There's been a lot of news in the National Football League over the last week, and I want to talk about it. Some of it is really significant, some of it is just interesting. But either way, it's worth listening to. So now we move to our new segment that I'm going to call NFL News Around the Block. So, starting off with the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. All the headlines are about Mahomes' recovery from his injury, what he's going to look like this offseason, if he's going to be able to play this year, and if so, when. The reports are starting to look like he may even be ready by week one, because according to every indication, he is ahead of schedule right now. First of all, he got the surgery right away after he tore his ACL towards the end of last season, which is something that not a lot of people do. Some doctors recommend waiting. Mahomes got the surgery immediately, and it seems to have worked. He's a fast healer. He is a great recoverer, and he was running by the Super Bowl, which is in February, just a few weeks after his injury took place. Few other notes on Mahomes. He showed up for the beginning of camp. He's joining the team for their preliminary workouts. Apparently, he looks really good. He's moving around. He's lifting weights. He's ingraining himself back in the organization. And I think he's going to be throwing and participating in practice by the end of the offseason. It's truly unbelievable. We don't see players recover this quickly from such a devastating injury often. And I'm thankful that he is, because the league is more fun when the Chiefs are dangerous. And the Chiefs are dangerous when Patrick Mahomes is under center. And the Chiefs have such interesting stories surrounding them this year. First of all, Travis Kelce came back for what is likely his last year, which is also an indicator that Patrick Mahomes is likely returning sooner rather than later, because Kelce wouldn't want to run this back just to play a season with Justin Fields. In addition, the Chiefs' receiving room is hopefully starting to come together. Rashee Rice is not going to be facing disciplinary action from the league, unfortunately. Xavier Worthy continues to develop, and now there are rumors that Tyreek Hill may be reuniting in Kansas City with his former team. Now, Tyreek Hill is not the player that he used to be. He's not the guy who won a Super Bowl with Kansas City or almost had 2,000 yards in a season with the Miami Dolphins, but he is still a very good receiver. And he is somebody that has played with Patrick before, understands his style, how he likes to move outside the pocket and improvise, the route concepts that he likes. They've already got that familiarity, so it would be an easy work-in. And as talented as Xavier Worthy may be, he's incredibly fast. He doesn't really have a lot of the technical skills to be a number two wide receiver. He's not as great at route running. He doesn't have the most reliable hands, but he is a versatile player. You bring in Tyreek Hill, all of a sudden that offense is really complete. And the passing game is going to be much easier for Patrick. Something else that I think will help as he continues to try to recover and, you know, play the season is the signing of Kenneth Walker. We have never really seen Patrick Mahomes with a consistent running game. Granted, this offensive line is not the best in the league, but it's still very effective. And Kenneth Walker is a Super Bowl MVP and Pro Bowl level running back. Having somebody in the backfield to take some of the pressure off Mahomes that he can turn and hand the ball to, not to mention forcing defenses to focus on the run game, which will open up more in the passing game because the attention will be split. I think that'll be really helpful for Mahomes as well. So I think the Chiefs are in a good spot. They haven't really had a consistent running game since Mahomes took over. Off the top of my head, their running backs, they had Kareem Hunt for a bit. They had Damian Williams, who almost won Super Bowl MVP, but wasn't really great in the regular season. They had Isaiah Pacheco for a bit. Then they brought back Kareem Hunt when he was older. No real stars. Guys who have shown a couple of flashes for a couple of games here or there. But Kenneth Walker is going to be the lead running back and play a role that Patrick Mahomes hasn't had as a complimentary star since he came into the league and since he took over as starter. So I think the Chiefs' offense is going to be a little different. I think it's going to be more efficient. I think as Mahomes gets healthier and healthier, that offense is going to look really good, and I think it'll be fascinating if Tyreek Hill decides to come back. Next, Aaron Rodgers. The Steelers are reportedly running out of patience with him, and to be frank, so am I. I am done with Rodgers. I thought he was going to retire 2 years ago, and he is still somehow fighting for a spot to be in the headlines. The Steelers' quarterback room is a disaster. It's a real disaster. Mason Rudolph is not a talented quarterback. Will Howard is not going to be the quarterback of the future. He might be able to perform as a game manager in spots, but that just makes him a mid-tier backup quarterback, if anything. And Drew Aller is the real conversation there in Pittsburgh because he is the epitome of the low-floor, high-ceiling prospect. He's got unbelievable physical attributes, but he struggles with his decision-making and with his mechanics. Mike McCarthy is a good offensive coach. I think he's going to try to develop Drew Aller, but if the plan is to develop the project quarterback, bringing in Aaron Rodgers as the veteran mentor is not the smart move. He has not embraced veteran leadership roles. And I don't know how many other options there are for Pittsburgh at this point. But I also don't think Pittsburgh should be aiming to compete. And if you bring back Rodgers, I really don't understand what this offseason was all about for Pittsburgh. You move on from Mike Tomlin, you bring in another high-floor, low-ceiling coach, and you bring back the same aging quarterback. So I hope that the Steelers make a different decision. Either bring in some other older veteran to help the guys along or just commit to one of the young people and hope that it pans out. either way, Pittsburgh needs to rebuild, and if they're running out of patience with Aaron Rodgers, maybe stop waiting for him. Next, this story blew my mind, and it's about Shedeur Sanders, because the reports are that Deshaun Watson may have an inside track to be the Browns' starting quarterback this year. That is shocking. And there was a lot of heated commentary about Shedeur last year and his role, because people thought not only could he be a first-round pick, he may be a top-5 pick in the draft. And all of a sudden, he had off-the-field issues, people doubted his character, and he started to slip. Not just out of the top five, not just out of the first round, but out of the first 4 rounds entirely. He was picked in the 5th round by a team that had already drafted a quarterback that draft. Not to mention, he didn't get a lot of reps in the offseason or in the preseason. When it came time to choose a starting quarterback, he was the 3rd option for Cleveland. And there were a lot of discussions about, is this intentional? We saw Shedeur play. There's no way he's actually the 3rd best quarterback on the Browns. But now we get to a point where we're a full year removed from that. He's had time to ingrain himself in the organization, show people what he can do, and he still can't beat Deshaun Watson for a spot on the depth chart. That is alarming. That is absolutely alarming. For context, Deshaun Watson was great 10 years ago. He then had an injury and was suspended for nearly 2 years because he was accused by dozens of women of sexual assault. And when he came back, he was awful, because karma has a way of, you know, working out for people like that. Deshaun Watson is so bad that 902 times in NFL history, a quarterback has thrown at least 200 passes in a season. Deshaun Watson's most recent season ranks 902nd. Out of 902. In other words, he's one of the worst quarterbacks of all time. And Shedeur can't beat him out? Deshaun Watson hasn't thrown 1,200 yards, completed more than 64% of his passes, or thrown 8 touchdowns since before Joe Biden was in office. So Shedeur Sanders has to beat him out in training camp. If he doesn't, then maybe he's just not an NFL quarterback. What we saw from Shedeur last year, he did win 3 games. He lost 4 of them. His statistics weren't great, but he showed some flashes. But overall, he really wasn't that good. He completed 46% of his passes. He had 7 touchdowns to 10 interceptions. His QB rating was 18.9. out of 100. So Shedeur's got a lot of work to do. I don't know how he's been training or what his process has been, but if you can't beat Deshaun Watson in a straight-up quarterback battle, I don't know what to say. I don't know what else to tell him. Next, George Pickens agrees to sign the tag and will play on the franchise tag for the Dallas Cowboys. Now, this is a notable story for the Cowboys offense. It means that they're going to be very dangerous next year. But some other interesting things to note is that George Pickens looked for trade offers before signing the tag, trying to see if there was a team that would be willing to give up assets to then sign him to a long-term contract. And I think that these teams are making the right decision. Now, some people are enamored by George Pickens and the season that he just had, because he was really dominant. He showed that he can run a wide variety of routes. He can be a consistent wide receiver. He's not just a physical catch guy. But the problem is, he did all of this in a contract year. And there were a lot of questions about his effort and his ability to contribute to a team the first few seasons of his career with Pittsburgh. That's why he was traded to Dallas in the first place. And is it possible that the Cowboys just unlocked something in him? Sure. Is it also possible that he gave it everything he had to go earn a huge contract and wasn't going to be the same guy if he signed one? That's on the board. And so for Dallas, getting him to sign and play on the tag, It's helpful for Pickens. He still makes $27 million this year, although we know he would have preferred the long-term security. But he's going to have to prove it once again. Last season, he had 93 receptions, 1,400 yards, and 9 touchdowns. He was one of the focal points of the Cowboys' offense. If he does that again, he's going to earn one of those top-end contracts, if it's with the Cowboys or not. If he underperforms, maybe he proves why people were right to be nervous. All right, one more quick story here before we go to one last break. We've got about 15 minutes left here in our show. Devontae Smith says to the NFL media that he's reportedly got, quote, a job to do. And all of this comes as people expect the Eagles' star wide receiver, A.J. Brown, to be dealt to the Patriots on June 1st for a 2028 first-round pick. Now, I don't love the trade for the Eagles. Brown's a great player, and Jalen Hurts needs the help at wide receiver. But it's clear that the locker room just isn't in a place where they need to. A.J. Brown can't do another year of this. He hasn't been getting the attention offensively that he deserves for a player of his caliber. And so I respect him leaving. But for Philly, they're going to need to depend on their young receiver, Devontae Smith, who was a first-round pick out of Alabama a few years ago. He won the Heisman, the Biletnikoff Award, had one of the greatest seasons we'd ever seen, and they traded up in front of the Giants to go get him. Since then, Devontae Smith has been really good. He's been one of the best number two wide receivers in the NFL. But with A.J. Brown gone, he's going to have to step into that number one role. Now, he only had 77 receptions for just over 1,000 yards and 4 touchdowns last year. Those are fine numbers. I expect those to get way higher. I think that he is a great player, and I think when he becomes the focal point of the offense, things will start to click a little better in terms of the passing game. I think that he meshes a little better with Jalen Hurts than A.J. Brown did, personality-wise, on the field. A.J. Brown is a better player than Devontae Smith, don't get me wrong. But Devontae Smith's play style, his aggressiveness, and his quickness for his size, I think, is going to make him one of the best wide receivers in the NFL this year, and I fully expect him to be in top 10 conversations by the end of the season. One other thing to note with the Eagles is that they worked with the New York Giants and the New York Jets this past week to make some real positive change in the world of sports. They helped get New Jersey to sanction girls' flag football as a varsity sport in high schools. And sports are beautiful for a lot of reasons. First of all, people love the competition. People love how they bring people together in terms of a community to watch games. But what I love is getting to see stories play out on the field and getting to see people and individuals grow through competition. And so many youth athletes, so many, you know, peewee football players, middle school basketball players, high school athletes get these experiences to compete, to play with a team, to learn about themselves as individuals and as professionals. And now that chance is going to come to the girls in New Jersey who have been waiting to play flag football. And I am super happy about it. I love the fact that this was a joint effort between teams that don't exactly have the best relationship. I think it reminds everybody that sports are bigger than some of the silly things that we let get in the way of our day-to-day life. Okay. That's the end of our walk around the block in the NFL. We've got a little over 10 minutes left in our show. We're going to take one more quick break. When we come back, we are looking at a bunch of different sports to talk about, some major stories, and then we're wrapping up with some hot takes with you again right after this.
From all of you good workers, good news to you I'll tell of how the good old Union has come in here to dwell.
Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Are you a graduate assistant, research assistant, or teaching assistant at UMD? Are you tired of low pay, long hours, high fees, and no safety net for international students? So are we. The UMD Graduate Labor Union is organizing for collective bargaining rights for graduate workers on campus.
Right now, the administration unilaterally controls our working conditions, but we are fighting to change that. To learn more about graduate labor organizing efforts on campus and what a union can do for you, visit umdgradworkers.org.
Are those early morning classes starting to feel like a marathon? Did Dodge strike again, towing your car when you least expected it? We get it, and we're here to listen. Whether it's academic stress, relationship issues, or just a bout of loneliness, Lean on Me College Park is here for you. Our supporters are fellow students trained in mental health support to help you through life's ups and downs. You can text our free and anonymous line anytime from 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. 7 days a week at 301-494-8808. You can also follow us at leanonme_CP for updates and resources. Again, our number is 301-494-8808. We hope you'll let us be a shoulder for you to lean on.
Are you looking for a club that celebrates friendship? Then Best Buddies might be the one for you. We organize social events for local folks with disabilities to come to campus and hang out. Some of our highlights of the past years have been our holiday parties, a polar bear plunge in the freezing Chesapeake Bay, our friendship walk with best buddies branches from around the state, and a winter formal with over 80 people. And if you want to learn more information, check out our Instagram at bestbuddiesumd.
All right, welcome back in to the last 10 minutes here of our show. I hope you've enjoyed so far. We've talked a lot about the NBA. We've talked about the NFL. And if you're just tuning in, this is WMUC FM 90.5 radio here in College Park. You're listening to the end of Winning Time. I'm your host, Jack Wynn, talking about your favorite sports segments in the DMV area. But we just did our NFL news around the block, and we're going to keep walking and head over to Sports Street, where we've got a lot more segments to cover. Starting off with the Kentucky Derby that took place this past weekend. Golden Tempo came from behind to win. Now, it was a great comeback. It was an incredible race. He was a massive underdog, by the way, 23-1 odds heading into the race, and he started way behind. Six speed and Dan and Bourbon were leading the race, setting the pace for most of it. But towards the end, Golden Tempo pushed it to the outside, burst it up past all the other horses, even beating Renegade, who was the heavy favorite to win the Kentucky Derby, by just a split second at the end. An incredible race. And there are some photographs of that finish. Highly recommend looking for them and finding them if you haven't. It's an exciting event every year. I personally am not the biggest fan of racing animals because of, you know, ethical stuff. But if it's going to happen, it's a storied tradition. It's cool to see, you know, him come from behind as an underdog and get that win. Next, heading over to baseball. The New York Yankees are on a great winning streak right now. But they had some negative stories this week as well. And that is because world-famous broadcaster John Sterling unfortunately passed away on May 4th at the age of 87. He was the announcer for the Yankees for 36 seasons. An incredible career and an incredible life. Somebody who dedicated themselves to baseball and really knew and loved the sport. The connection he had with fans, the way he communicated the game and talked about it in such an entertaining way, drew in so many new viewers. Think about all the games that he's called, how much history the Yankees have had over the last nearly 40 years. He's been a part of all of that, and I know that he's resting now in a better place. But moving to some sports conversations, Aaron Judge is entering the MVP race with the unbelievable season he's having, still fighting for that lead in home runs. Ben Rice is right behind him. He's had an exceptional season as well, really developing and coming into his own as a player. Granted, he's got an injury in his hand that's bugging him. He missed one of the last games recently, but I imagine when he comes back and starts playing at the level that he was for these first, you know, couple of weeks here to start the season that the Yankees are going to continue to be dominant. The problem with New York is this isn't going to do anything for anybody. They have entered this kind of double standard where they can be great in the regular season. Until we see it in the playoffs, we're not really going to believe it. Aaron Judge is known for struggling in big spots. So is the rest of this roster. And the Yankees in the regular season are great. They're fun. They hit, you know, bombs. But they're going to have to prove that it's not just a regular season thing. Next, checking in on my Stanley Cup pick, I was wrong. I had the Lightning making the Stanley Cup this season, and instead, for the fourth straight year, they lost in the first round. And it is clear that they're just moving. We're moving on from the Lightning. They used to be kind of the power team in the East, and instead, they've just started to fall off. The door is open for them. I thought that the Lightning's pedigree was going to put them over the top. I thought Stamkos and Kucherov had another run in them, but instead I was wrong. However, I'm 50% correct, because I had the Avalanche going on to win the Stanley Cup, and they are very well positioned to do so. They just won an incredibly high-scoring game against the Wild the other night, where they scored 9 goals. They were up 3-0 immediately, and then all of a sudden it was tied 5-5, and we still had a lot more scoring left, but the Avalanche proved that they're a very effective team. They're fast. They know how to play together and set up spots and sets, and that makes them really dangerous. They've got experience going after championships and on playoff runs. They were incredible throughout the year with over 115 regular season points, and I expect them to continue to be dominant and to close out what has been such a great season for them. Next, moving on to golf, Cam Young wins the Cadillac Championship. He was 19 under par on the tournament. He led wire to wire. An incredible performance from him. He's been really hot recently. It was his third PGA Tour win. And to elaborate more on the dominance that he showed, at one point, he called a penalty on himself and then still went on to win the tournament in dominant fashion. He beat Scottie Scheffler by 6 strokes. It was a great performance. I think he's going to continue to show why he's one of the best golfers in the world going forwards. All right, I do like to wrap up the show here with a couple of hot takes. We've got just over 2 minutes left. And something that I want to start with is I think Paolo Banchero, moving back to the NBA now, is going to be the best player on the champion. I think that he has shown at this point that he can play not just consistently, not just be the best player on a playoff team, but in the biggest spots against great teams, he plays really well. I mentioned 45 points in Game 5 against Detroit, 38 against Detroit in Game 7. Granted, they lost, but he was the only person being really effective for that team in any manner. And I just think he's a great player. Tyrese Maxey, there's going to be arguments about him being a top 10 player by the end of this playoff run. And that shouldn't surprise anybody. He's been one of the best scorers in the league the last few years, and Embiid's absence with Philly, he has stepped up into that superstar role, and I fully expect him to continue to embrace that. Brock Bowers, I think he'll be an Offensive Player of the Year candidate this year. I don't know the last time we had a tight end win Offensive Player of the Year, but if you look at that Raiders wide receiver room, there's really not a lot of talent, not a lot to depend on for Fernando Mendoza. I think Bowers is going to get all of the attention on that offense, and I think he'll be rewarded with, you know, acknowledgement from the Offensive Player of the Year committee. And lastly, this is my hottest take. I think Jaylen Brown is being traded this offseason. And a couple of years ago, that wasn't a very hot take because the Celtics couldn't get over the hump. But once they won the title, it seemed like they were going to keep this core together for a long time. But after this first round played out the way it did, after the mistakes that Joe Mazzulla and the organization made preparing for the series and then blowing the lead the way they did, I do think it's time for a shakeup. I think there are a lot of good players in the league that you can trade Jaylen Brown for to rebuild assets and start to restructure. And if that's the case, it'll be all back up to Jason Tatum, as I'm sure Celtics fans prefer. All right, that's our show. I'm already looking forward to next week's episode. There are going to be a lot of great games and playoff runs going on this week. Can't wait to talk about it all with you again.
nothing's gonna be the same again. No, nothing's gonna be the same again.